Hey, this is Tyson Mead, and you are listening to Deeper Digs in Rock. So take that, Eddie Van Halen.
History in Five Songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. How are you? Welcome back again to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff. I hope your summer has been going well. Better strap yourself in for this one. This is going to be maybe a little bit all over the place because what we're going to talk about here, we have to do another foundational episode. We've done episodes on the birth of heavy metal in terms of what we call proto-metal. Proto-metal being defined as before heavy metal. We've done two episodes on this now. So this is the third one, and I've always promised that this episode would have to happen, and it is happening now. So this is going to be the last, the end of a trilogy of foundational episodes on the birth of heavy metal, and then we're free to kind of roam all over the place. We've obviously been roaming already with some of these episodes. But anyway, so we've done a proto-heavy metal on very early, traces of heavy metal. We've also done a part two proto-metal, which looked at the late 60s. I believe I themed everything 1969 in that one. But as I cautioned throughout, those episodes, the real true birth of heavy metal doesn't really happen, I don't think, in a big way until 1970. So this is an episode that is going to be, well, I'm going to call it Who Invented Heavy Metal after a book I did on this called Who Invented Heavy Metal, a book that ends in 1971, but the crucial year in that book really is 1970. So everything we're going to be talking about here is from 1970. Again, these words just may burble out of me. I may be a little all over the place. I've given a similar talk on this, on some other shows I've done and interviews I've done, and also at university conferences and at Metal Fest, keynote speaker kind of things. So this is a terrain I've gone down a few times. This is pretty cool in terms of being able to frame it around a History in Five Songs episode. Let me give you a little bit of a background. Going back really only about a half hour ago, on my walk down to work, I pulled out one of my trusty iPod Classics with 5,000 albums on it. I've got two, and they both have 5,000 different albums on it. But I played some old obscurities to get me in the mood to do this episode. And what I learned from these, okay, so what I played was I played Host. I played Hell Preachers Incorporated. I played a little bit of the Ursa Major album, Dick Wagner. I played Cavas Jute. I played Haystack Balboa, Genghis Khan, Tear Gas. What I learned from some of these is how important and crucial and very different the five that we're going to talk about are. There's no mistaking that they are inventing a new kind of music. Something very different is happening here. So that's what we get with these ones we're going to talk about. So, without further ado, why don't we dive right into this episode and start with our number one choice. Let's take a listen to it, and then we shall discuss. This is Black Sabbath, off of Black Sabbath, released February, Friday the 13th, 1970. This is NIB. Take a listen. All right, so what we have there is This is the first album that essentially invents heavy metal proper. Black Sabbath came into being. Geezer, Ozzy, Tony, Bill are sitting around. They've got Jim Simpson, their manager, around. They basically posit the idea, what if we made some really scary music, you know, based on all those Hammer horror movies we loved growing up. There was a movie called Black Sabbath. So the idea was, hey, let's make some really scary music. You know, Jim Simpson up there in Birmingham, he'd been putting on all these bands from the British blues boom. Everybody was getting a little bored of the British blues boom. Along comes Black Sabbath. They come from the British blues boom, from a band called Earth. They morph into this idea. They've got these originals going, basically 1969. They're playing War Pigs and the like, which are going to show up on Paranoid. But what we get with this song right away, first off, there's the song Black Sabbath, and that's super important. I played that on a previous episode. I wanted to just sort of step out and do something different. What I like about NIB is that this is like a huge stack of pancakes, a big stack of power chords. There's no mistaking what's going on here. It's not a blues song. This is a very important part of the invention of heavy metal. This idea that we are moving away from the blues boom. We are making a music that is not based on the blues. It's based a little bit on classical. It's based on the tritone, Diablos in Musica. And you get a little bit of that with this song. You get more of it with Black Sabbath. There's other things. There's Wicked World, Behind the Wall of Sleep. All these pretty cool new things. You know, this album is not my favorite in terms of the invention of heavy metal, but it is absolutely the first. You've even got a scary name of a band, kind of a satanic name of a band. You've got this green witch on the cover, on this overcast sky in front of this old mill. Everything about this is saying we are into a new form of music here, heavy metal. So really, you know, to net out what I put in my book, Who Invented Heavy Metal, and every time I give one of these talks, basically the most important album in the invention of heavy metal is Black Sabbath's debut, self-titled Black Sabbath. Okay, moving on. Next important record, we move, you know, really just 5 months later, we're still in 1970. Well, let's take a listen first of all. This is from Deep Purple in Rock. This is a song called Hard Lovin' Man. All right, there you go. So what we get with this song and with this album, okay, so Deep Purple had been going before. They had a different lineup, different bass player, different lead singer. They made these three kind of psychedelic albums that are a little bit based on the Vanilla Fudge format of taking other songs and stretching them out and adding organ and making them slightly heavy and dramatic, blah, blah, blah. I don't like any of those first three Deep Purple albums particularly much. Then they went and did this bizarre classical album. Now they're back. First proper rock album with, crucially, Ian Gillan on vocals and Roger Glover on bass. These are the two additions. They're both writers. Richie Blackmore, of course, is a writer. Ian Paice is not writing so much. John Lord is not writing so much. This would be a problem later on in the band. But what we get here right off the bat is a record that is, one of the things that Roger Glover said about this record was that he wanted, and Richie Blackmore said this too, this was sort of the mandate for Deep Purple in Rock. They wanted anything that wasn't exciting, we weren't going to put on the album. So everything is super exciting on this record. And this is a very heavy record, even compared to that first Black Sabbath. I mean, I've always posited that basically if it came down to, you know, which of these albums, say they came out at exactly the same week, the same month, of 1970, the Deep Purple album is more impressive. It's more modern. It's more classical. It's faster. It's more nimble. The Black Sabbath album has a lot of jammy qualities on it. It's got a lot of long songs. It's got a 10-minute long cover on it. So that's a big no-no in terms of, you know, this idea of being a true inventor and moving forward. So Deep Purple, Hard Lovin' Man, I picked this one. There's all sorts of great riff rockers all over this. You've got Livin' Wreck and Bloodsucker and Speed King. Great, great songs on here. You've got one long ballad, Child in Time. It's kind of like the proto power ballad. But it's a classic, but it's the only thing that's not super heavy on this record. I picked Hard Lovin' Man because what you get here is the staccato chug, the first kind of heavy metal gallop. To my mind, Hard Lovin' Man is the song that predicts the rise of something like an Iron Maiden 10 years later, almost exactly. So essentially, you've got a new kind of heavy metal here that goes beyond, you know, the template of something like a Communication Breakdown or a Paranoid, which that album isn't out yet. But essentially, you know, you get this machine gun guitar effect. But here it's super fast, and it is in the proto Iron Maiden heavy metal gallop standard. So there you go. That's our number two. Before we move on, let's take a short break, and we'll be right back.
When we dropped the first few episodes of Rock and Roll Archaeology into the feed 3.5 years ago, little did we know that this telling of rock and roll history would become a pantheon of rock and roll podcasts. Since many of you first joined us on our rock and roll exploration, the halls of the rock and roll pantheon have filled with shows like Deeper Digs in Rock, Rock and Roll Librarian, Muses, Art of Rock with Caution Friends, Real Rock with the Reverend Andy King, Miss Pamela's Pajama Party, Vinyl Snob, and more. We are proud of this one-of-a-kind approach to an audio magazine of high-quality shows. That is Pantheon, and thank you for your support. We couldn't have done it without you, our diggers who listen to all of our shows. And now, we are excited to let you know that every show available as part of Pantheon can be found in their own podcast feed to subscribe to in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review the shows you've come to love. We look forward to adding more shows to fill the halls here in our Pantheon of Rock and Roll, and find them all at pantheonpodcast.com. Keep up the rockin'.
All right. Before we move on to number three, I wanted to just mention kind of a bit of an aside. You know, I mentioned those bands that I played on my walk down to work today. I had a book come out long, long time ago. Well, the 70s version of the book, long story, it's the third version. The Collector's Guide to Heavy Metal, the 70s. So it's a book of something like 2,000 record reviews of 70s stuff, long out of print. But in the back of this book, I had a couple of cool lists. And one of them was the heaviest obscurities of the 70s. And I've got that list in front of me. And I just want to mention a few of these obscurities, because the point here is that that there were a lot of albums all in the periphery, you know, going on that essentially were not as good as the records we're talking about here, but there were a lot of heavy-ish records happening. Now, when I say heavy-ish, they leaned towards other dated things, like the blues. So you had dated qualities like the blues, you had dated qualities like garage rock, but you also had the nascent qualities of something that also was brand new in 1969-70, and that's progressive rock. So you had a lot of prog going on as well. So I just wanted to rattle off a few names from this list. I'm going to try remember which ones are not like late 70s, because the heaviest albums of the 70s really happen to be, you know, almost by definition, they are at the end of the 70s as life gets heavier and heavier all the time. Let me just run down this list and tell you a few of these records that were pretty heavy from the 70s. So you had Night, Sun, Morning. What else is old here? Buffalo, Only Want You for Your Body. I believe that's 74. Kane, A Pound of... Okay, that's newer. Atomic Rooster, we're not going to talk about here. Death Walks Behind You. So that was another pretty heavy thing from 1970. Here, High Tide Sea Shanties, which is sort of an offshoot Simon House Hawkwind-related thing. Hawkwind itself is something heavy coming out in 70. Hard Stuff Bulletproof, I think that's a little later. Bang, Sir Lord Baltimore, those are two that are always mentioned as early proto-metal. What else here? Electric Food Flash, can't remember how old that is. There's your Sir Lord Baltimore, Kingdom Come. Buffalo Volcanic Rock is early. Mass Slaughterhouse, don't remember what year that's from. What else is old here? Ultra, don't remember how old that is. Warhorse. War Pig, that's a Canadian obscurity. What else we got here? Highway Robbery, Neon Rose, Harry Chapter, Can't Get Through. That's a cool early thing. One of the big areas of heaviness coming out is krautrock, this idea of this avant-garde prog rock, but a lot of it was pretty heavy. And in that, you had Harry Chapter and you had Deschin. I remember getting that album as a kid. What else? Ocean, Blood Rock was a pretty heavy record. So that's a good American one. I believe that is 1973. Three Man Army. Ooh, Ready Teddy, Neon Rose, Birth Control. Some of these might be newer. Cactus. What else? Toad. Survivor, All Your Pretty Moves, Tiger B. Smith, Tiger Rock is an early krautrock related one that was pretty heavy. Toad, Oda, Savage Grace 2, Granicus, some of these you might be getting into the mid-70s. Euclid, Captain Beyond, there's Tear Gas, Growl, Bow Wow, Signal Fire. Bow Wow from Japan started pretty early. Let's see, Flax One, don't remember how old that is. Dust is an overrated one, considered heavier than it is because of that cool album cover with the skeletons. Let's see, Randy Holden, Population 2. Oh, I could tell you the whole story of that one day. Interviewed him, bizarre story. Blood Rock 2, Randy Holden was an offshoot of Blue Cheer. Let's see what else we got here. Cactus Restrictions, Jericho, Stray Suicide. Stray should be mentioned in this discussion. Funky Junction, that's a bizarre story, a tribute to Deep Purple. Asterix, Gun, Armageddon, that's 1975. Dirk Steffens, Pink Fairies, Kings of Oblivion, I believe that's 73. Juan de la Cruz Band, Edgar Broughton Band, Wasa. Flower Traveling Band, there's another Japanese one. Socrates Drank the Conium, don't remember what year that is. Knit Singers, pretty early. Alamo, there's Bang Again. Colored Balls, Australian band, I think that's about 74-ish. Irish Coffee and Jerusalem. So there you go. That was from my list of 100 of the heaviest obscurities of the 70s, and I tried to leave out the later stuff. Okay. So the whole point of that was to tell you that there are lots and lots and lots of these records that you could be out there exploring, but these are the most important ones. So moving on, number three on our list is Uriah Heep, Very Heavy, Very Humble. This came out June 13th, 1970 in the States. It got a different album cover and it was just called Uriah Heep. Cool thing about this this record, both covers, totally different covers, they essentially look like the proto version of what Derek Riggs would come up with Iron Maiden. So, Iron Maiden is distinct because they put this ghoul on the cover, this cartoony thing. You normally wouldn't see, overtly cartoony cover arts, but when you saw Iron Maiden, you saw, this is exactly what's in the tin. This is heavy. This has got to be heavy. So, Uriah Heep was kind of doing that 10 years earlier with this ghoulish, cobwebby, very heavy, very humble. It reminds me of Edward Munch, The Scream. And then even the second one is sort of like a Kraken monster on Uriah Heep, Uriah Heep. So let's take a listen before I babble on anymore. This is a little bit of Gypsy by Uriah Heep.
I was only 17, I fell in love with a gypsy queen. She told me, hold on. My father was the leading man, said you're not welcome on our land. And then as a foe, he told me to go.
So, what you have there is essentially a similar sound to Deep Purple. I mean, Uriah Heep was practiced next door to Deep Purple. They have this really cool You know, Hammond organ, heavy sound. I personally think Uriah Heep, when they were on with a song like Gypsy and also Bird of Prey, which I'll talk about in a minute, they actually captured this sound even better than Deep Purple, but Deep Purple kind of did it more consistently. Uriah Heep would have Salisbury as a bit of a weird album, and then, you know, later they would kind of go into a lot of different styles. But yeah, what I love about this is just an incredible groove on this, super heavy groove, great production. You know, one thing that Mick Box always says when, you know, people say, oh, you're a lot like Deep Purple. He always famously says, well, we have five singers, they have one. So that was, you know, and he says it good naturedly, and it's cool because they have all these really crazy harmonies. Now, this is something that happens on the heaviest song from this era, Bird of Prey. Very interesting. What happens with Bird of Prey is it swaps in for, the swapping out song is Lucy's Blues. So Lucy's Blues is on Very Heavy, Very Humble. Bird of Prey is on Uriah Heep, and it immensely improves the record. With Black Sabbath, they kind of did the same thing. So they had Evil Woman, which was a Crow cover, and that gets swapped out for Wicked World, which is a heavy original. So their record gets better when you move over to the States as well. Kind of interesting there. So Uriah Heep totally is in this thing of inventing heavy metal. It's not a blues-based band. It's more of a classical-based band. And basically this album is very consistently heavy throughout. All right, so moving on, number four on our list is a return visit by Black Sabbath. September 18th, 1970, they put out their second album, Paranoid. This is Hand of Doom. All right, so what I like about this is in 1970, Black Sabbath actually makes two albums, so they double underscore that they are the kings of heavy metal at this time. And Paranoid is leaps and bounds more modern, better, heavier than the first Black Sabbath album. It's got War Pigs, Iron Man, Paranoid, Hand of Doom, Fairies Wear Boots, Rat Salad. So at Planet Caravan is sort of the quiet song on it. But really, most of the rest of this, there is still some jamming going on, and there's some long stuff. You know, Fairies Wear Boots is a little long. War Pigs is long, but there's a lot of cool modern heavy metal riffing going on in War Pigs. Very cool song. So yeah, so what you hear again with this album is that they are proving that they are serious, that their heavy metalness is not an accident and a casual thing the way it is with Led Zeppelin, and frankly the way it is with Deep Purple as time moves on. Deep Purple is a band that would kind of say, well, we're not that heavy metal, we don't want to be considered that completely heavy metal. So Black Sabbath is proving that they in fact are very heavy metal with Black Sabbath Paranoid. So moving on, number five, we have Lucifer's Friend from Germany. December 70 is when this record comes out. This is something called Ride the Sky. Take a listen. So there you go. Our last choice here is actually a German band, but they wisely hire on an English singer, John Lawton, who oddly enough would become Uriah Heep's singer later on. But what you get with this record, Lucifer's Friend, so it came out in Germany. You know, this is definitely our least famous of these records. I believe everything else here, you know, is a gold or platinum type record, depending on what territory we're talking about. But Lucifer's Friend is an obscurity. I mean, it's not that obscure as a lot of the things I mentioned off of that crazy list, but it is a pretty obscure record. You know, it didn't do anything really. It did come out in the States on a small obscure label called Billingsgate. But this record throughout is quite heavy, and it's definitely in that Uriah Heep Black Sabbath mode. So it has a little bit of a datedness. It has a small percentage of blues. It has a small percentage of prog, of garaginess, of being a keyboard band. Oddly, you know, we have two other keyboard bands in here. Keyboards is not considered a heavy metal thing, and moving forward, there will be less and less keyboards in our you know. Slide rule, or top shelf heavy metal, or unarguably heavy metal bands. But just by a quirk of history, we do have Deep Purple and Black Sabbath in here, and now we have Lucifer's Friend in here. So it's kind of odd. So they're all kind of in that same boat. Black Sabbath is not in this boat. Black Sabbath's essentially a power trio, no keyboards, you know, standing lead vocalist, one guitar, blah, blah, blah. But there you go. So 1970, the true invention of heavy metal, where we strip away, you know, the argument I always make, and I always get into debates with people about this, but I think heavy metal becomes invented when the blues is stripped out of it. When everybody says we are bored with the British blues boom, let's move on. You get that doomy devil's tritone in there, the Diablos in Musica. You have more of something that is derived from classical rock, maybe a little bit of prog in there as well. But we're leaving the blues behind and we're coming up with something entirely new here. So that's it for this episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. Tell me what you think. I mean, you can comment on my Facebook. You can email me at martinp@inforamp.net. I've got a site with all my books. I've written 85 books on heavy metal. That's at martinpopoff.com, but my email address is there as well. So you can find me there. But yeah, Facebook me. I'm pretty good with my Facebook. Send me some other show ideas. Would love to hear them. But that's it for now. This is Martin Popoff signing off for History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. We shall see you again next time.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.